Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugalpil peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the first peoples of the land and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country via the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, what a beautiful day. Blue sky, sunshine and plenty of heat. She's going to be a scorcher next few days. It's been a good weekend. Let's hope it's been a good weekend for you, as it has for me. Today, my guests are live in the studio, joining me. Looking very nervous, looking very, very nervous. But let's not go there, Belinda, looking bug-eyed and nervous, but you're okay. Belinda Mason, a multi-award-winning photographer, is joining me in the studio with her son, Liam. Now, Belinda won the Richest Photography Prize in Australia back in 08 for an image titled Four Generations. She won the Human Rights Award for Photography for images from Yulngu and Balanda, and we're going to talk about that one today. That was in 2008. She has been invited to speak at numerous festivals, in 02 the Melbourne Arts Festival, 04 the International Festival of Photography Sydney, in 07 the Australian Centre of Photography, in 010 the Blowfish AIPP, we'll get Belinda to tell us what that is in a while, Blowfish AIPP conference in Sydney. And she won an award for most emotionally intense image in 2008 at Perth PCP, an international award. So we've got quite a prestigious Australian photographer here in the studios today. Belinda, how are you?
I'm good.
Honestly?
Very nervous.
Of course, right. That's what I'm waiting to hear. Liam, how about you, mate? You're not half as nervous. You're sitting back like you've done this 1,000 times. How are you, lad?
I'm good, thank you.
You're good? How old are you?
I'm 16.
You're 16. You work with your brother, Dieter, who was older than you, 18-year-old, Dieter.
Yep.
You and your brother work with your mum. Tell us what you do when you go out with your mum.
So my mum is working on a project, has been working on projects for all our lives, basically. So we've been shown a lot of different aspects of the world at young ages. Generally, me and Dieter have just tagged along, not really working on anything. Just, you know, basically carrying around
bags. Yeah,
yeah, carrying bags. Mm. But I guess starting from this year, me and Dieter have actually started working with our mum to create larger pieces of work. So because my mum doesn't do interviewing and I love interviewing people, trying to be a journalist when I'm older, I guess we've created a system where we work together and make these pieces come to life so you get to understand a further story of the artwork.
And Dieter, what's his role?
Dieter takes photographs during the interview. So he will take a number of photos just as the person is moving around, moving their hands, and film it at the same time. Then we'll put my interview with the footage and we'll create a small little piece about it, which then can be looked on the internet or any other.
So you create digital stories.
Yeah.
It's not movies that he's shooting because he's shooting image. You're getting the audio and you just run the image and run the audio over the image.
Yeah.
Digital stories. It's fantastic, mate. It's great to see young fellas like you guys. I must emphasise these young fellas are of the settler society, but I can get white Australians or other Australians, as we call people, you know. But there's many different names, Balinda, as you know, Belinda. But Belinda, welcome to the program. How are you? Good?
A little bit less nervous.
Okay, there you go. Just settle down, woman. You're right. You know, there's no problem. It's all cool. It's just a casual chat. There might be two or three people. There might be family that listen. Nobody else listens. Yeah, true. Nobody else listens. Just me,
oh,
family.
Oh, no, don't tell me. I know how many people listen, and that's scary.
You've your dad was is of German origins and did some travel around with you as a young child around the country.
I think that's probably what made me just want to stay in contact with the broader part of Australia. He didn't have any money because he was an immigrant, and so he built a four-wheel drive out of the chassis of a Volkswagen, and then got a pot rivet gun and sheets of aluminium and just made this car. And my mum was a teacher aide, and she used to get time off from the education department to homeschool us on these trips, and we travelled on all the dirt roads all across Australia. It was absolutely fantastic childhood.
And you met First Nations people in those travels as a young child?
Yes, I did, through Alice. I remember Alice. What I remember of it is I remember Alice Springs, and I remember travelling across the Nullarbor and the communities there, and that was sort of, you know, and when you look at the time frame of that, we're going there next. We're going to see Uncle Yummy Lester next. So that'll bring me back right into my childhood and where all the trips, and it's wonderful to be able to take Dieter and Liam along with me this time, and they'll actually see part of what my childhood was.
Well, when you're talking to him, Liam, you let him know that you sat in the studios with me here. He's been on the phone, and we've been mates for a long time. So pass him my regards. He's a wonderful old man, that man. Yeah. All right, and now you're doing similar with your boys as to what you did, your dad did with you. You travel with your dad. Your boys are travelling with you, but they're certainly doing quite a job. Fantastic to see Liam doing the interviews, and I saw him in action yesterday. And then young Dieter, who's had to go back for schooling purposes on the plane yesterday. It's just great to see these young fellas making more of a team with yourself. I mean, even though you've won so many awards and things, there's so much more to what you're doing now, having these boys in their roles. How do you feel about it?
I think it's wonderful. First of all, I think the reason why I used to bring them along was when they were there and I couldn't, they were so little, I didn't know what to do with them except for bring them. And I remember, you know, sometimes they'd be there for quite difficult or controversial photographs and having to explain to them the reasons why I was doing a photograph and what it meant and why it was important to the person. And then I noticed how much it changed their lives and made their perceptions of the world broader. And that probably is one of the biggest driving forces, the ability to show them such a incredible viewpoint of the world and so many viewpoints and the diversity of the people in our community and how rich that makes our community.
Liam, how do you feel about it? I mean, did you miss out on some school, or did you just go on school holidays? And the broadening of that educational experience, I mean, you're probably learning equally as much, if not more, valuable lessons and more about life being out and travelling with your mum than you did in school. But it's a good balance. They complement each other, I imagine. What's it mean to you?
Well, you're definitely right there. One, it's the last week of school, so I'm not going to really be learning anything at all besides, you know, how cinema photography works in movies, I guess, if that. But in general, whenever I go up to any community or any photo shoot of my mum's, really, I think it teaches me a whole lot more than school could ever really teach me. You can never really learn about someone's culture from a book, I think. I mean, it can give you facts, but you never get that depth that you would get with someone else. You never get the stories that you hear from someone. It's not the same. A teacher trying to explain to you how Aboriginal culture is when they've never experienced it, it's not hypocritical, but it's just naive. And I just find that when I go up to these communities, it's just so much better. And there's no way that it could be replaced by simple week of education.
You've been out to Arakoon, for example, one of my favourite communities. You've got some good brothers up there, good family up there. You've been there?
Yeah, I went up to Arakoon with my brother, and we my brother and I teached filmmaking to young people with with psychological disabilities. It was hard at first, but in the end, we found people that could really shine, and it was definitely worth it in the end. And it was a learning experience for me and my brother, and my mum went up with us too to help us out as well. It was just this, it was incredible just to, I had to learn how to teach and I had to learn how to, I learned so much from their culture, but they also learned a lot from me, I guess, as well. And in, we worked together a lot, which I found was incredible.
Two-way learning. It doesn't happen a lot in those situations. Mm. Generally, the teacher sits out the front and is the authority, and you sit there and learn. You know, you don't often see the presenter or the teacher learning in those formal sort of senses, but it's great that you can see that and experience that, the two-way learning. Belinda, you're in town at the moment on a project called Yolngu on Balinda.
That's right.
Tell us about it. Well, let me just explain first for those of our listeners that may not understand. Yolngu is the word for us blackfellas up in the territory there in Arnhem Land and stuff. And Balinda is a term for white men across the largely across the territory. Balinda is used as to refer to white men. As here in Queensland, or in this part of the state, we say Murray and Migloo. And that's where the white whale Migloo got his name. It was Murray's that gave him that name, because he's white. He's a Migloo. So we say Murray and Migloo in the territory. It's Yolngu on Balinda. And Belinda will tell us about this photographic exhibition of Yolngu on Balinda.
When I won the Moran, I thought I'd take the opportunity to do some of the teaching that they allow. And so I went up with Uncle Merv Bishop, and we travelled from Maningrida to Ramanginning, Yirrkala and Nhulunbuy. And Maningrida's actually got a really special place in my heart because I have a very dear friend. He passed away in 2006. But I've continued the story with his son. And so he came along on that trip. I got funding for him to actually travel with us as a translator and to be that advisor in that process. And also I got to teach him photography. So he's actually been in some exhibitions in Perth and in Queensland and actually in Barcelona as well with the work that he's been doing. And we decided to get a whiteboard and a black texter and have black on white, because you often hear the voices of, it's so common, white people love to tell about what they think and how they and it's and it's overrun and overwhelmed by the voices that are from the community themselves, Aboriginal people. So I said, it was the anniversary of the intervention policy, and so I wanted to capture those voices. And it was only 12 months later, and it was whether it was going to go ahead or not 12 months later, and it did. And so it was the response to that, and they wrote about how they felt. And Blake wrote, our laws have been the same for thousands of years and yours change whenever you want. And I think in the territory that really encompassed the feeling there, the lack of control over those decisions and the lack of input. And so it was a very powerful, strong image. And then I got asked to exhibit it in Western Australia, and I thought, well, I can't go to Western Australia and not include people from Western Australia. So I found a contact up in Broome, Robert Dan. Wonderful bloke. And he took me around Broome and into Beagle Bay, and we did the same project, but the question sort of altered. It was, what would you like to say? And it's quite confronting when, as a white person, you're asking that question. What message do you want me to take back to a city? If this appears on a wall and the majority of people that come are going to be white, what do you want to tell them? This is a voice that you can have. And whether that, you know, doesn't mean that everybody wants to do it. But when they do, they look and they, sometimes you can sort of see on their face an expression that they'd really like to say something in particular, but they don't, and then they rethink and they say, okay, well, I could just say that, you know, those simple two words. And then it's like, well, you know, there's a bit more to it than that. You know, you can broaden it out and put your point across. And then they sit and they say, I don't know what to write. And I say, just, all right, well, and I'll just walk away and I come back and there's an essay. Okay. Or there's just one line that's extraordinary.
Mm.
So, and there's over 100 people from across Australia. So I went to, the exhibition was shown in Albury, which is a fantastic regional gallery, really progressive. The quality of the exhibitions that they have there is fantastic, and it was wonderful to actually be a part of it. And they own another series of images in their collection that I did on sexuality and disability. So it got to go to Albury, and then of course I went down to Melbourne and collected more voices. I've just been to Canberra, and I'm here in Brisbane.
Collecting more voices for this exhibition.
I hope so.
So it seems to just expand, grow and grow.
Yes, yes.
But how does that work in with the actual displaying, the expansion, the growth? I mean, how do you determine? Do you take out some of the old and then replace it with new, or is it just the original concept and it's growing and growing and getting bigger?
The original concept's just grown. So it hasn't always been possible to take Dieter and Liam on all of those trips, only because it's expensive. But when I do get the chance, then those voices are recorded. And, you know, we'd all love to have that ideal world of having every single one of those people's voices recorded. There'll be the opportunity to show the recordings, the visual ones that have been done, as well as just the audio ones. And so there'll be a selection of images that I think it's best when you exhibit in a community to give the community the voice, and then the images that that appear on a screen like a slideshow or on a television as footage are definitely a part. So you can see a part of the exhibition, so that everybody can see the voices strong across Australia, and the primary focus is the people from that community. So their images will appear as the bold centrepiece of each city.
So people can, you'd like to hear from people if they want to be involved or be engaged.
Yes, I'd love
project.
To hear. Yes, yeah? Yes.
How long are you in Brisbane for?
I'm just here for today.
All right, okay. So if there's any First Nations people out there that would like to engage, they can call you.
Yep.
What's your number?
0414 787 788. That was nice and slow.
It was. Yes, and we'll tell the number again, so if anybody does want to, you might find somebody around here that might want to do it too. Tell us about this project, Unfinished Business.
Unfinished Business is a new project that I'm working on, and that's also why I've come to Brisbane. From the work that I did on sexuality and disability, I became close friends to a man called Tom Shakespeare, who lives over in the UK, and he has short stature. And he asked me, he works at the World Health at the moment, and he asked me to take a photograph that captured disability in Australia. And I said to him, well, look, if you're going to do disability in Australia, there is only one topic that you need to cover, and that is disability in the Aboriginal communities. And he said, wonderful, okay, well, you find your story. So I got in contact with Uncle Lester Bostock and asked him whether he would be the person who would be interviewed for the World Health and be photographed.
Now, Lester's role is?
What's
his title?
He is the chairman of the First Peoples Disability Network, which was just, at the time, was just forming, because it was in, I think, I may have this wrong. I only know about the New South Wales branch, and I was dealing with Damien Griffith in that forum. And so I know that the First Peoples Disability Network's been going about, it must be 12 months now. And that's because of the growth and demand in the community for these services. And I sent the photograph to Tom, and he said, you know what, you should keep on going here. So I went back to Uncle Lester and Damien and said, let's do this. And they're very, very busy with everything that they're doing. And so I just kept there, you know, every now and again going and seeing them, we should do this, for about 18 months. And then, you know, built a framework for it so it would be possible. And then they had a board meeting and discussed it all. And then 3 weeks ago they said, let's do it. So Tom is trying to help us get the work exhibited at the United Nations in Geneva in September next year, when there's going to be a big forum on Indigenous disability, because the First Peoples Disability Network is the only disability organisation in the world that focuses purely on Indigenous disability. So they really are an incredible organisation for the work that they're doing, and it really is a piece of unfinished business, that needs a lot of attention drawn to it so that conditions and situations can be highlighted and the voices of these people can be heard. And this gives me that opportunity to help them do that, and it gives me the opportunity to show my boys another world.
Certainly is another world. Disabilities within the First Nations communities is, I don't know how many times higher than mainstream Australia, but it is considerably higher. There's enough disadvantage, as if there's not enough disadvantage within the First Nations community without a disability. Where there's disability, it's multiple disadvantage. And they could be out in Arakoon. I mean, I went to Mutajulu a couple of years ago and I saw a number of people in wheelchairs. It might only have been three, but it's only a small community, 300 people or so. And I see three or four people in wheelchairs. And that sort of thing strikes you. Now, to be in Mutajulu, which is at the base of Uluru, in a wheelchair, I mean, it's going to be tough going. Tough going. In that such isolation and the heat and stuff like that. So these services of First Nations people have been establishing along the way. It's just great to see the First Peoples Disability Service. With this particular one, I suppose there's a diverse range of disability that you photographed. Tell us just some of them.
Of course, it is very broad. So you've got disabilities that are visible and non-invisible. You've got congenital and acquired. There's the sensory disabilities. There's the psychiatric, brain injury, and intellectual, which are three. They're three disabilities that just incorporate the brain. So the broad cross range is really, really critical in the work, and so I'm travelling next to photograph Jandama, who was burnt when he was six, and then I go to South Australia to photograph Auntie Gail Rankin, who I grew up with her sister as a teenager. I grew up with her sister Karen, and so we're very close, and it's wonderful to be able to photograph her because that gives me that connection, that personal connection into the exhibition, which is very, very important to me. Just like Blake was important for the Yongalong Ballander exhibition. Then we go up to photograph Uncle Yami Lester, and then across to photograph a very unique, unfortunately it's not a unique story, but I asked Uncle Lester if I could touch nerves or how far he wanted me to be able to go, like where were my boundaries on what I could do, and they said you touch as many nerves as you like. So I'm going over to photograph Marlon Noble, who was incarcerated for 10 years without charge. He has an intellectual disability, and which was acquired through meningitis as a child, and he's an extraordinary young man who just wants his name cleared.
He likes to ride a motorbike, I understand.
Mm.
Yeah. He's an extraordinary young man, and only just recently released. I mean, his story has just been told in mainstream media just in the last 6 months or so, and it's great to see that story being told. All right, Unfinished Business. We've got a song called Unfinished Business. We might just play that and continue our chat. My guests are Belinda Mason and Liam Mason, mother and son. Photographers and aspiring journalists, young Liam, doing interviews and things, talking about a range of communities and exhibitions that help expose the situation with First Nations people. Here's Mundi and Turner, or is that Mundi and Turner? It might be Mundi and Turner. No, it's Mundi and Turner. Yeah, right. Yeah. Mundi and Turner with Unfinished Business. Yes, been getting away with it for too long. That's what's been happening in this country we all call home, Aboriginal land, more commonly known as Australia, I suppose. But yes, there's a lot of unfinished business, no question about that. And it's good to see people like Belinda Mason facilitating the stories being told, facilitating those experiences being exposed to mainstream Australia. It's an important role, an important job. And it's great to see you doing that with the Neerum brothers, the sons, the boys, Liam and Dieter, are known as the Neerum brothers. And they're pretty talented young fellas. They're quite Neerum, the whole project, Yarraka, aren't they? Yarraka's in here with me. Yarraka's in here because she wants the big notice. No, she's not really wanting the big notice help. But she's here because she's been a part. She's been asked by Belinda to bring along my little grandson, Quaden, for to be involved in unfinished business. And he's probably got some unfinished business where he's unable to grow anymore. He's got unfinished business. Quaden, my grandson, is he suffers from or has achondroplasia. It's a form, one of the many forms of dwarfism. And Belinda, is he the first little person that you photographed in as a part of unfinished business?
Yeah, he's the first little person, and he'll be the only little person.
All right, he's going to hog the spotlight on his own in that regard.
Absolutely. But he's not the first short stature person I've photographed.
You were saying the other man in the UK.
Yes, Tom Shakespeare.
Shakespeare, yes.
Yeah. And I also photographed a lady down in Melbourne who's called Margherita Coppolino. And I'm mentoring her at the moment because she's wants to be a photographer. And then an extraordinary girl called Brittany, who plays basketball for the Paralympic team. So there's an incredible community out there, and to highlight that is really important. And Quaden gives the opportunity to highlight the positive community that he's going to grow into.
Okay, how did you become aware of Quaden?
That was really interesting. I got asked to do a commission job, just a normal sort of standard job for the Human Rights Commission, and they were looking for models. And so I put a notice up in the Redfern Community Centre looking for models, and someone said, hey, you should get, there's this girl called Binoy, so you should get her. And so I rang and met her, and she and her son were both in the photographs. And they were very good sort of, it was about... she's a businesswoman in a meeting room talking, and that's the photograph. And we were in the car talking as I was driving her home, and she said, oh, you know, what else do you do? And I said, oh, I'm doing this project about women in sport, and I know this. I'm photographing this girl called Brittany, and she's short-statured. And she said, oh, my sister, she's got a little boy who's short-statured. And I went, oh, okay. And then in the background, the project with First Peoples Disability Network is just bubbling away, and I thought, wow, when the time is right, this is going to be the story.
All right. Well, it was certainly good to. It's great to have you up, and you took some amazing shots with that little fella and quite a number of us in the family. Yarraka, what are your thoughts on this sort of thing? What does it do for the likes of Quaden, for people with disabilities, people with achondroplasia? How do you feel about it?
Well, first of all, like I said in the interview, it's just been a great experience just to sit down and hear your viewpoint, to sit down and hear Quaden Senior and the twins, you know, being big sisters, just seeing how it's affected, you know, a whole family. It's impacted, not in a negative way, although at first I saw it that way, but, you know, I really don't see my son as having a disability or a rare genetic disease as it's classed or known as. But, you know, this is just a really great opportunity. So I really thank Belinda and her beautiful boys for coming up and for Binoy for that stepping stone. And I really believe it's going to be the beginning of something strong to come. You know, it's just a great opportunity to be able to get our story told, and with telling our stories, you know, it brings about education on the issue, especially of Indigenous disabilities, because it's so prominent in our communities, like you mentioned. And, you know, with being able to share, you know, our culture is all about sharing and caring, that brings about awareness, and with awareness comes respect. So hopefully, you know, my goal is just to be able to share with people what exactly achondroplasia dwarfism is, and that they're really no different. I mean, they'll be made to feel different all their lives because they're so small and they've got a few different features than us. But, you know, I just really want to make his life as easy as possible. So just by trying to tell our story and educate people about this condition is all I can do to be able to help make his life easier. And with Belinda and her boy's help, it's just made it a lot easier. It's been a great start.
Yes, it's certainly another angle that you would never have thought of that you might be engaged in or involved in to help promote better understanding and more awareness of disabilities in our own communities, let alone our own families.
Yeah.
Very good. Liam, anything you want to add or want to say along the way with about your experiences, this project?
Well, I've experienced disability a lot in my life, so it's always great to see all new aspects of it. I always enjoy that. Yeah, I just love travelling with my mum and love to see new stories, and I feel very privileged to be able to be a part of this.
You certainly are, young fellow. Very privileged. There's too many mainstream Australians live and die without ever making contact with my people, without ever having them tell you their story, tell you the story of place and what the different meanings of certain aspects of our lives are and stuff. You know, you're very privileged. There's no question about that. And it's good to see you you see it in that way. That's great.
You know, can I just add, sorry to butt in, the twins, when we got driving home last night, we just had the most amazing conversation and it was very encouraging. I said, you know what, that's going to be us one day. You know, we can be like Belinda and her two boys. We can travel, tell our story, capture stories, and that's our dream, to travel around Australia and do what you guys are doing. You know, like, it's great that yous are able to do it, and it gives us so much encouragement, inspiration and motivation to be able to continue from our perspective. So he's really instilled something great in me and the twins and our family.
It is good. So, Belinda, today you would like to hear from anybody out there that does want to make a call to tell more people's stories. That can be done if they call 0414 787 788, 0414 787 788. You can call Belinda Mason if you want to be involved in a project.
I'm the one who's lucky. I'm the one who gets to travel into these people's lives, the diversity of people, and be privileged enough to be able to hear their stories. I'm definitely the one that's lucky to have met your family.
Well, it works both ways. We're fortunate to be able to tell our story, and the little man there, as you can see, he's a special little man in our lives, that bloke, young Quaden. But it's great to be able to have the opportunity to meet up with yourself and have this exhibition going around, have you working on this sort of stuff. It's amazing work. Where to from? You took a number of shots yesterday, and it was interesting. I thought it was more than interesting. It was quite kind of quirky. You've got us all, like, there's about six of us in the family standing around, and well, you've had to take my shorts off, Yarrika, to show me legs.
No. Yeah.
We had to show our legs. And you've got Quaden standing at about knee height because he's a little fella. And it was kind of quirky where he's in the focus is on him, but all the legs around him. And there's some shots where his hands are up in the air, or he's looking up and trying to get up, reach heights, the silhouette. I can see where these awards come from, just the what you were doing yesterday with that camera, and see the results. It's just fantastic. It's great. So it was a good experience, the shoot yesterday with this little fella and all these black legs behind him. Yeah, yeah.
I like it because the legs look like trees.
Yeah.
And the trees is the grounding to the earth.
Mm.
And that there's the hand that's just coming down, that's waving because it's just moved so fast that it's just that slightly out of focus, which shows the tenderness in the hand, that you know that movement is a tender one, and that he's reaching up, his mother's touching him and he's reaching up towards his father. And the expression on his face, it's a strong expression, it's not a smile, and he's not crying, which he didn't, it was fantastic. And you can see his absolutely gorgeous hair. That's what I like. I like the strength, the family that in it, because everybody's legs were there. Everybody was there because everybody is there for him. He's got such a strong, committed family, and that's why, you know, I like to take photographs that reflect somebody's journey, and when the boys interview them, I get the opportunity to hear that story and then just translate all of those emotions into a photograph. And I hope that I have done that.
Done well. I should clarify why I took my shorts off, because they were long shorts or short longs. They come down near my ankles, and I had my boxers on underneath. So rather than roll these things all the way up my leg, it was easier just to drop them. So yeah, it wasn't an obscene shot or anything like that. You know, but we were all fully clothed. So I should just clarify that, letting people know I had to take my shorts off for a photo shoot.
Yeah, we all had clothes on.
Yeah.
Although it looks like we're half
but,
naked.
It was great, the legs, just those bare legs and nothing else there, just young Quaden in front. Well, guys, it's probably come to an end of the program. Where to for you? You're going to see Yami Lester and the young noble over in the West.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Jandamara.
And Jandamara. Now, the kids went to school with Jandamara. He went to school here at the Murray School.
Sandy
Mellon. So they grew up together and went to school together for some years here. Yeah, yeah.
We're quite
close to the family. Yes, quite close. So good luck with your travels. Thanks for coming in. And we're looking forward to this. Will be on show at the United Nations in September next year.
We're really hoping that it will happen. It will definitely be a part of the conference, and we're hoping that they'll give us full gallery space, and that's all being negotiated at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, keep up the great work. It's good to have you in the studio live to tell the story, and particularly highlighting disabilities in the First Nations communities. And the way you're able to capture it and tell these stories is just fantastic. Thanks, Belinda, and thank you to Liam. You keep up the good work, young fella, because you're well on the way. Well on the way to being the journalist that you aspire to be. And the multimedia thing, that's the thing these days. You guys are capturing the essence of multimedia and making digital stories and telling and allowing people to tell their stories and stuff. So, and you, Liam, are teaching other young First Nations people. That's fantastic. So you can't get much. You can't get a lot of criticism thrown at you because of what you do, because you're giving back. You're learning along the way. There's two-way learning. You're giving back. Mate, you're in a very fortunate position, and you know that. So it's great. And thanks a lot for coming in, both of you.
Thank you.
You better thank Big Brother when you see him too for being part of it all.
Yeah, I will.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
And we'll talk again along the way, I'm sure. We might have to go over to Geneva to see for the launch of this show. Now, the Social Justice Commissioner, Mick Gooder, has released another of his reports. And he is saying that the way Indigenous Australians are governed needs a complete overhaul. Now, this is in his annual report. And he says the way Indigenous Australians are governed needs a complete overhaul, according to a report from the Australian Human Rights Commission. His quote, "We need government to sometimes just get out of the road and give us a chance to make some decisions in our own communities and in our own ways." Mick Gooder said, "The Northern Territory intervention, for example, has disempowered Aboriginal people with the creation of super shires." He goes on to say, "Now this about governance and over governance of First Nations people. How about this other story from the Western Australian, where some Western Australian women have been threatened with big fines unless they take part in an Australian Bureau of Statistics health survey that they say is intrusive? A young First Nations woman, Gina Williams, she's a singer and quite a well-known personality over in Western Australia, over in Perth. She's a cafe owner as well. She was shocked when the Australian Bureau of Statistics interviewers arrived at her home and said she had to answer questions about her sexual health, contraception practices, and breastfeeding. The questions are part of the health survey, Australian health survey for the Department of Health and Ageing and National Heart Foundation. When Ms. Williams refused, she was sent a hostile letter saying she had 14 days to make a time for the survey or she would be fined $110 a day until she complied. How outrageous is this? This is just damn right criminal that this government can be placing these demands on anyone. She was also asked to provide blood and urine samples, which the ABS said were voluntary. She said she didn't have any choice. There were no options but to answer. Surveyors interviewed 35,000 people between March last year and June this year. 13,000 are Indigenous people. Will be forced to complete the survey by July to build a nationally representative sample. So that's the ABS survey for the Australian Health Survey for the Department of Health and Ageing and National Heart Foundation. How's that for you? So it's no wonder Mick Gooder comes out with a report saying governments just get in the way. That's outrageous. I just cannot believe, well, of course I can believe it. I've seen it so many times. But can you believe that? Just wander into the cafe and say to the owner, "Well, take part in this survey, or else you'll be fined $110 a day until you decide you're going to do it." Yeah, it's a bit tricky. This system, it's a bit tricky. This government, the way things work. Talking about governments, well, Candu Campbell, the Premier of Queensland, losing a few of his men. Three of them have resigned from the party and gone across to work with old mate there. What's his name? I can't even think of his name now. But three, Campbell Newman certainly got probably have a few more people leaving him, causing him some trouble. And we see Kay Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull are high in the stakes, or the surveys there that show that they're the voters' preference for them as leaders is much higher than for Abbott and Gillard. It's an interesting one. Time to go. You just have a great day.